This podcast is sponsored by the Center for International Business, Loyola University New Orleans College of Business.
Welcome to Gumbo of Opportunities, the podcast where we dive deep into the landscape of international business with a closer look at the state of Louisiana and New Orleans. We will hear stories, insights, and strategies of influential global players of the Bayou region in a pursuit to make the Bayou one of the most attractive areas for businesses. This is Gumbo of Opportunities. Hello. Hi, I'm Alessandro.
Hello, I'm Gustavo.
Welcome to this special episode for Gumbo of Opportunities. And this is an extra episode that we wanted to include in our second season. Something that came up just last minute, but something that we believe is an important message that we want to convey to our listeners. So this episode is going to be called 20 Years After Katrina, Global Business Lessons Still Unfolding.
Correct. Thank you, Ale. This is it is a very special occasion. It's hard to think that it's been 20 years since Katrina happened on August the 29th, which, by the way, is also the feast of St. John the Baptist. So it is like two tragedies coming together, and then from there, you know, the phoenix taking off again. So there's a lot of things we would like to explore here. We'll see, you know, how this unfolds. But the importance of our natural disasters and what they bring, you know, gives us sort of an understanding of the pre and post conditions. So we'll look into things such as what disruptions prevented timely, you know, response in 2005, what was happening there. We'll talk a little bit about the legacy that we have observed and the transformation that the city has gone and the region since. And then, of course, you know, we'll give, since this is the Gumbo of Opportunities International Business, we'll look into the international perspective in what actions, lessons, you know, we have learned and how can we move forward understanding the significant recomposition that we observe in production activities here in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And let me highlight something that I was reading today, and the day we are recording, so today, the day we are recording is actually August 30, mm-hmm. so which is exactly the 20 years anniversary. Mm-hmm. And today I was just scrolling down all our emails that we get every day, and I saw an interesting piece written by Dr. Cole, our president at Loyola University in New Orleans. And I want to quote him on that because he sent us a very clear message, which is also connects perfectly with the type of episode we are delivering today, which is, as Jesuit Catholic University, we are called to pause, to remember, and learn from the past. And in doing so, we carry forward our mission to serve others with wisdom, compassion, and courage. And I believe that is, Gustavo, is a very positive, still very fitting message for the type of episode we are about to start.
Correct. You know, this is a moment to stop and think. These events that occur with unknown frequency and make us think of elements that are much deeper. And this is, well, how can we come together as a society, and what changes can we make? What is the level of stewardship that we have in? And if we use them, you know, the resources correctly, what impact do we have in the students, in the, you know, families, the faculty, the community, the staff? And so it is indeed a moment to stop and think and reassess, you know, the blessings that we have and how we can continue moving forward with them.
Exactly. There is always some lesson to draw from the past. I mean, and of course, the hope is to do better every time we, you know, we draw some lesson from the past, and so
correct.
To learn something and do it better the next time we are facing the same type of or a similar type of challenge, right? Mm-hmm. So, just for the benefits of clarity, just let me share a very, very brief information. So, of course, as listeners might know, on August 29th, 2005, Hurricane Katrina made landfall in the Gulf Coast, and actually the storm passed about 10-15 miles from the city. I believe it's from the east side of the city. And we know about all the effects that had on people, the death, the devastation, on people and on business activities, a city that was kind of, it saw a huge demographic shift.
Yep.
A lot of people displaced who moved from either another place from the same state or even outside the state. Mm-hmm. Now, in order to talk about the first of the three main blocks, Gustavo, you just mentioned earlier, so the disruptions,
correct,
right? So just to make it clear, let's remember that New Orleans as a city is kind of based on a three-legged stool type of business activities, meaning that the three main, sectors are tourism, of course.
Yes.
All the activity that comes and goes through the port of New Orleans, mm-hmm, which is an amazing international hub for import and exports, and we can also say education.
Correct.
Since we have incredible educational institutes here in New Orleans. So this type of course, structure for New Orleans had different type of disruptions.
Yes.
Soon as Katrina came in, and that also produced negative effect, not just on businesses, but also on all the people living here in New Orleans. So just to kick in on the idea of disruption, what is your opinion about it? So what do you think has been the worst disruption and what consequences that led?
Mm-hmm. So, we think and we talk about in our program that location matters, right? And when the French first came here and they selected to build a city on the specific bend of the river, the question that that still bubbles up is why? Why in that location where the significant amount of the land is below sea level and consequently is prompt for flooding? And that question remains, right? Now, this is not the first place that has been done. The Dutch have consistently been able to take away land from the ocean and build levees, and so the issue with New Orleans at the moment first was an element of overconfidence on this infrastructure that existed, believing that the levees were stronger than they were, number one, right? Because the problem was not from above but from below. The storm came. It came through the east, and yes, east-looking storms tend to be heavier on their tails because of their spinning and rotation, and hence the heavy rain came afterwards. So yeah, there was damage on the roof and what have you, but the big damage was the amount of water that came and the pressure on the levees that eventually broke at the base, and that creates, automatically water's going to follow. It just flooded, the pumps couldn't keep up. It just flooded extensively, about 80% of the city, knocking down, all the infrastructure. And you started earlier saying that New Orleans is one of the largest ports. I think is, if I'm not mistaken, the largest port in the Western Hemisphere by tonnage, because we move a lot of grain and fuel. And so hence, the city was a major port that then lost, significant traffic because it was literally shut down. People have to be evacuated, so it lost the business, it lost the people, the roads, the airports, the collapse of the roof of the Superdome make things even worse. People are stranded on overpasses, and people migrating to Houston or to Baton Rouge. Students being moved from the universities and being housed in, I believe, 400 universities around the world. So that was a total shutdown of the city. What is more impressive is that the city came back. That's the part that is, seriously impressive, that, the reinvestments infrastructure took place. In the city, and we'll play with some statistics, used to have just a little bit over 400,000 people back in 2005. Today, it has just about 400,000 people. So a lot of human capital was drained. As the water was draining, also human capital was draining. And that, of course, creates issues with resources allocations and recompositions that matter for the business activity that we have today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, we literally saw by just looking at statistics how, of course, immediately population went down. because many people were displaced, and many people lose their home.
Yeah.
And still of today, the famous Lower Ninth Ward, mm-hmm. which was one of the most devastated neighborhoods in New Orleans, still hasn't recovered. Right. Oh, I mean, the same people who were there before Katrina said that the neighborhood changed forever after that.
Correct. It's a situation that you observe. The damage is so extensive that part of the city were not allowed to rebuild. They were condemned because the risk is absolutely too high. Another thing that was interesting in parts of this readiness, and we'll get to this later, but it was the issue of when Katrina first came, it hit Florida. And it hit Florida, and people thought that the hurricane would come to Florida, do its thing, but not cross into the Gulf of Mexico. Well, Katrina did it. It came, it leveled Florida, a path of destruction, and then jumped still with enough force into the Gulf of Mexico and found unusually warm waters. And it just fed on that water, and it just got massive. It was like, you know, we're watching here a picture of Katrina in the rings of destruction that it has went over, I'm going to guess, 100 miles across. And so this thing was not just a hurricane. It was a monster storm that came with a tremendous amount of water out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, many people describe it as kind of like a hurricane, which basically was covering the entire Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
Basically from almost from the coast, western coast of Florida up to almost Galveston in Texas.
Correct.
So just to give you an idea of how massive it was, right? And Gustavo, you mentioned actually the one element of disruption which was related to the levee broke. So mm-hmm. it's an element of disruption that pertains to infrastructure failure, right? Let me add you one more infrastructure failure that happened, which is about basically the communications, how communication break down.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's think and let's concentrate on the fact that it was 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So it was some time ago, I would say.
It was. I mean, in terms
communication
of
were different.
Yes, it has changed a lot.
20 years ago. So at that time, the fact that all power grids went off, cellular phones went off, mm-hmm. there was no way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that cannot be an excuse per se.
Yeah.
Still, it shows how there was some deficit in the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that led to a lot of delay in the response from all those bodies, state-wise and national-wise, mm-hmm. that could and should have been there sooner, just FEMA, just to name one among all of the others, and what about even state intervention. So these communication breaks kind of delayed everything.
Oh, absolutely.
And people paid hard price for it.
Oh, it was, I mean, and I remember seeing, at the time I was in Pennsylvania, we had just moved there, and we saw the massiveness of this disaster, and we remember seeing and then learning that FEMA miscalculated first, what was going to happen? Second, you know, the Marine Corps of Engineers thought that the levees were strong enough. So FEMA did not prepare well to respond to the worst case scenario, which indeed happened. Right, the flooding occurs, and not only occurs from the bottom, so you cannot pump this, you know, that easily. But an interesting part of the story that that we hear little about is, there was one company that did estimate the potentiality of the worst case scenario coming into, you know, Katrina coming in, and that was Walmart. And Walmart says what will happen if the levees break, and then, you know, what level of disaster could occur. Sure enough, you know, happened what no one wanted to happen, and Walmart was ready. And I'm not giving a, you know, free commercial to Walmart, because that's not what we're here about. But what happened was that FEMA realized that Walmart had better information than they had at the time. And so the way that FEMA was able to deliver some of the assistance, some of the very, very needed assistance, which ended up being not enough, was through Walmart's truck. FEMA called Walmart and then asked them, can we put our stuff in your trucks? And Walmart said, yes, please do so. So here the partnership between private institutions and government agencies helping, you know, the most needed at the moment came up to be a way to solve part of the problem. Again, we emphasize the water had no way to go because it was already at the lowest point of the city. But the partnership and the cooperation somewhat help in the process of at least assisting some of the people. Once again, 1,800 people lost their lives, and one is too many. Millions of people got displaced. Many never came back. And that created this issue of lack of coordination, lack of communication, no energy, no drinkable water, roads totally covered, which we did not know what the depth of that was. So, yeah, all the necessary elements for a very chaotic situation occur at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, so we started discussing about physical infrastructure failures, and now we are moving on, if you allow me the term, discussing about non-physical, meaning like soft, if correct. You allow me the term, soft
yes.
infrastructure deficits, and in particular, the delays that we discussed, the bureaucratic red tape that happened, because even when communications went through, too much time passed before the first aid came to New Orleans in form of trucks, in form of vessels bringing foods, in forms of choppers trying to rescue people stranded on top of their houses with meters and meters. And please allow me to use meters since I'm from Italy. I'm not very confident in using imperial measures, but like meters and meters of water. And therefore, infrastructure failures, soft and physical infrastructure, as much as we saw some element of social inequalities as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see, when tragedy hits, those that have less resources or a cushion are the ones that suffer the most. And they are the most needed, and they are the ones that we should address first. And they had no way to get out. They have no way to... no savings. They rely absolutely on the help that could be given to them. So prompt response and giving access to that, it's essential, right? Now, you also mentioned something very important, Ali, and that is economic activity came to a halt, and firms still need to go on. A port lost, you know, a tremendous amount of business activity, and that, in many regards, left the city and has not come back. For instance, ExxonMobil used to have headquarters here in New Orleans. That's gone. That's they moved to Galveston, close to Galveston, Houston area. That's one. New Orleans used to be the main port of entry for several, fresh fruits from Latin America. That also moved out to Alabama, Jacksonville, Alabama, in the Mobile area. So we lost several, key industries that used to be essential for the business. Carnival used to be here, also headquarters. They also move, and they're now in the Miami area. So the city not only had the impact of the storm, it comes to a halt, that people have to evacuate, but then businesses also left. And that creates an important recomposition in terms of revenue and the potentiality for new business development. That, of course, is also an opportunity for new businesses, but that takes time. It just doesn't happen overnight, right? It
doesn't happen overnight. You have to rebuild a structure, even maybe change the structure of a city, which is, as you said, doesn't happen overnight.
Correct.
And it has to be an effort, and there has to be effective governance.
Yes.
Because, again, we're talking about extensive collaboration across industries and across different levels of government and...
Yes. You know, and later we'll talk a little bit about this, but I think it's timely to mention this. The rebuilding of the city couldn't happen just by the city itself, right? I wasn't here at the time, but I have conversed with people that were here at the time, and they said that, you know, massive investment took place, billions of dollars to rebuild the levees. And the way to do it, levees and gates and new pumps, when that was done, the authorities, they reached out to the experts, and the experts are the Dutch. And so they brought the Dutch engineers and also Japanese, and the Dutch, when they came here to the city, and this is anecdotal, I do not know if it's totally true or not, but I tend to believe it is. When the Dutch arrive here, they look at the way these things were constructed and they say, you got it all backwards. These levees and these doors are actually backwards, and you are inviting the lake into the city. And so they came, they did their thing. They're masters on, you know, on stealing water to the ocean and building, you know, beautiful areas. You know, you just have to fly over Amsterdam, and what you see is canals. And so the Dutch came and they used their technology. And surely enough, the city has resisted, the levees has resisted a multitude of very strong hurricanes. Like I believe the last one that was pretty large was Ida, I believe.
Yes, Ida in 2022,
I believe, yes. Ida, which was a monster storm as well. And while there was a problem with power, one of the towers came down. The levees, you know, were strong and well-built, and the pumps were very well. The new gates also work very well. So on that regard, the city has learned and has invested in, so it's much more, the readiness and the resilience appears to be, you know, stronger.
Yes, thank you for already, like, push towards the second section of this episode, which is, in fact, what do we carry as legacy after Katrina? And you started mentioning something very relevant, which is that at some point, I mean, people already had a strong resilience. What was missing was having the same level of resilience from the sides of institutions. So let's hope that this is a lesson learned, because people are resilient, very resilient here, actually. People don't even fear hurricanes, and they are willing to rebuild everything, even every single year, when a hurricane passes through. But at the same time, we cannot have this connection between society and institutions.
Correct, correct. I mean, the city, the people in the city have, as you mentioned, a level of resilience that goes hundreds of years. What we observed with Katrina was one of many hurricanes and natural disasters, which are happening more often and with a stronger, you know, with more power, higher frequency, more power, and they are happening. You know, climate change is a real thing. And the city has a competency on that, right? How to react to natural disasters, which could be used very well in, you know, areas that may face situations like this. So I think that's a competency that could be exploited by the city in its resilience. It's still yet to be done, but I believe it is important to account for that strength, right? That capability, yes, to do things the right way. And, you know, while these are events that doesn't have anything to do with the other, COVID was another one in which the city was able to, you know, get back on its feet, even though it was a hot spot at a certain moment. It came back, and it has done, you know, quite well with natural disasters and also other forms of disasters. So, yeah, I think resilience is a very good word that you use, Alejandro. Sandro, because this speaks of the culture and mentality for engaging and doing business. We just need to be able to commercialize that resilience a little bit better.
Yes, and I mean, every time we have classes, and also our students are well aware of that, we talk a lot about resilience, and we do that using the lens of businesses. How businesses should be resilient, why this is relevant, to survive in an everyday turbulent market. And it's easy to understand how the same concept applies perfectly, looking at institutions, looking at local governments, looking at state governments, and from there up.
Yes, absolutely. Resilience. If you look at the world index of resilience, the two cities that always bubble up as some of the strongest are going to be London and New York. Paris comes out about third, and then Tokyo, I think, is about fourth. And then from there, other cities are more or less resilient to events. New Orleans, in terms of natural disasters, you know, it has it all against it, and the city comes back, right? And I think that's something that the lesson that we can use in teaching is not how many times you fall, right? How many times you can get up, and having that attitude to move forward, it's definitely a big, you know, positive outcome that we get from being, you know, in a situation such as the ones that New Orleans faces. New Orleans and the nearby. I mean, I'm not just talking about New Orleans. You got to think about Miami. You got to think about Houston, in a way, Galveston, Mobile, Alabama. Happens to be the New Orleans is the largest in the area, at least. You know, we give 100, 200 miles each way. And so and it's one of the most historic cities in the U.S. So it has that that positive, you know, twist.
Yes, absolutely. So there is also a policy lesson, therefore, here, right? So we discuss about resilience, and now also institutions should have the same level of resilience as the community, because the community understood that and the community showed that there is a resilience in the people. And the same has to be absorbed by institutions as well. And that could be formed in different ways, like, for example, revising and having effective disaster management plans, being able to have effective collaborative governance schemes across the different level of governments, including also all those authorities, like, for example, FEMA, that is focused on making those type of plans and making them work, and being the first, basically the first actor, the first organization that provides the first aid.
Correct.
In case of natural disasters. Because natural disasters, we know that can happen. And now we also know that there's a worrying trend. Natural disasters are happening more frequently and they are stronger.
And they're stronger,
In their intensity. So we cannot allow to have human responsibility, in particular on the hands of politicians, on the hands of those decision makers that make plans and have to execute plans. So like you said before, it's not important if you fall, it's important if you are able to stand up later.
Correct.
And I would, if you allow me, I would also add, it's even more important if you stand up quick.
Correct, yeah.
Quickly.
Yes. Now, you mentioned something, Ali, that reminds me some of the research that we're doing recently about the role of institutions in providing the conditions for businesses to succeed, right? The institutions on themselves are not businesses, but they provide the platform, and that platform allows for businesses to benefit of the presence of spillovers, predominantly not a spillovers. In the fact that the city has that resilience, that it could use that knowledge in terms of what works and what doesn't work at the institutional level, could on itself be, you know, spun out so that you get, you know, better business environment and more readiness for the preventing disasters. You cannot prevent the natural disaster, but you can prevent the disaster that comes out of the natural event if it were to happen. And that creates, you know, a positiveness that could be taught, and hopefully people can learn that. So, yes, I would like to, if there's any people listening out there, if you want to learn how to be resilient, come to New Orleans. I think that's a skill that is important. And why am I saying this? Well, here in the notes that we have, we also talk about many companies don't have disaster, you know, plans. Everybody talks about disasters, but at the end of the day, many companies don't know how to manage crises, because one expects that the crisis would not be, you know, would not happen. And so learning here in New Orleans, a part of that could be a very positive lesson that we can get. So we invite you to come here. We invite you to get the feel of what it's like to be in a city that may be prone for natural disasters, but also knows how to stand up and stand up quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just come here, talk to the people, learn from their experience, and get inspired by them. And in fact, just to, I guess, to close this second section about the legacy, I just want to point out again the importance of always considering the element of social equity.
Yes.
We discussed briefly that already a couple of minutes ago. I just wanted to point out that remembering what happened 20 years ago, where about 40,000, or maybe 50,000 people were stranded and were basically sheltered into the Superdome
yes.
at that time. So now you think of the Superdome to just go and watch football, right?
Yeah.
Think about that once you go in. And think about that as being a shelter for all those people of the poorest neighborhood in New Orleans who didn't have any possibility, any car or any financial means mm-hmm. to just leave the city.
Correct.
So there was no other choice. And it's funny because I was watching a documentary just a couple of days ago about Katrina, of course, and documentary said that basically the line of people waiting to get into the Superdome less than one day before the expected touchdown of the hurricane was more than 2 miles long.
Oh, wow.
So not everyone has the same mean to react to adversities.
Yes,
so please, let's always remember that preparedness plans works in the way we consider all circumstances and consider that not every people can react the same way with the same pace and not every people have the same resources to use.
Exactly. Yeah, people, again, once again, it is our responsibility if we have resources to help those that have less resources. And within that, access to information in a situation like this is essential. A transportation to make sure that people can get to the safe place also is an essential component. So yeah, very well said, Ali.
Okay. So what now, to close this episode, what can be then future actions? So always looking with our international business lens, mm-hmm. What can be then future takes that we should suggest or we could suggest to people?
Well, one is, you know, definitely the city has balance, right? It's up and running, it's doing very well, still has problems, but it's doing very well. So I think creating a hub of innovation, a hub of interaction among world leaders to come here, as we do with the Creative Sparks Conference, is just one of the examples. And of course, it's our grain of salt that we add here, of sand, if you will, so it allows us to move into building up the knowledge capabilities of the city and the knowledge while having fun, because the city is known for that as well. So it's an environment in which we might be able to educate people. We are net exporters of human capital. So continue building on that is an important component. Second, you know, playing a role as one of the main hubs for international trade and expanding the possibilities for international trade with our neighbor, Latin America. I'm biased 100%, but we believe that could be a very strong component of giving and bringing businesses here into the city. So promoting that could also be an important mean of business. And I say this because the natural port of entry to the United States from Latin America is New Orleans. On that, the French got it right. This is, you know, the Mississippi River is the Mississippi River. You can go up the river all the way up to St. Louis, no problem. There are no dams. You just go up, right? So there is a potentiality to explore and expand the beauty and majesty of the location. We still have to have the investment. So the investment has to come. We can provide the human capital and educate people on these opportunities. So definitely, you know, seminars that can talk about, you know, what to do in the case of, you know, hurricanes, what could do in the case of earthquakes, how can we play the best, you know, scenarios in terms of flood and water management. All these elements are of essence, and the city provides those opportunities in terms of international business. But also, it provides a very diverse city that people want to come here. And so why not continue exploring that, right? So come and visit New Orleans and let us enjoy your presence and have the possibility to tell you the story of the city and what we do here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I mean, you mentioned and you discussed about infrastructure and you discussed about also how that reflects, how could reflect positively on supply chains.
Correct.
You mentioned the port of New Orleans, and we know how important to have supply chains that are flexible enough to support huge shocks. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, is one key message that we can vehicle here into this future action. Okay, what are we looking forward mm-hmm. to the future to make sure that we minimize the negative consequences of mm-hmm. natural mm-hmm. disasters? Mm-hmm. And another one, if I may, is collaboration, mm-hmm. which is already something that we discussed, something that was needed, something that lacked when Katrina happened in New Orleans, yes. right? So, and it's funny how you early mentioned the Dutch coming in and kind of working as type of, you know, consultants yes, on how yes, to revise the systems of levee and pumping stations and stuff. And in fact, it is something that we should do. So just look around, see what others did, see which other cities across the world have or has had similar, let's say, similar experiences, similar difficulties in managing specific phenomena. And, of course, the Netherlands is one example. It's correct. One perfect example of a city like Amsterdam that is basically, again, under the sea level, like New Orleans is, I mean, mm-hmm. for the most part, of course.
Yes.
And how they were able not to see the water as a possible danger, but take advantage of it and build the city around it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, and I want to go back to a point that I have forgotten to talk about. The city has five separate railroad tracks that come into the city. The city has, down to the Gulf of Mexico in the San Bernard Parish, has one of the largest, you know, has over 30 miles of port that give access to an unlimited amount of containers. The city has invested both in the Port of New Orleans and the Port of San Bernard, I believe another $2-3 billion making these the first environmentally friendly port. So there is a lot of business potential that creates that agglomeration that we speak about in our papers and also the clustering for this particular industry. We just need to spin this with the knowledge component so that the city becomes again what it was once and what it could become again. There is plenty of space to continue growing. There is plenty of space to manage cargo in both in bulk as well. And so, yes, it is a massive port of entry. It has that potentiality. So I see a bright future in that regard. We still have to consider the fact that water can come easily, and management of that water is an essential component for the city to survive.
Yes, absolutely. And always staying on the topic of collaboration, another major example that we can use is the example of Japan. Mm-hmm. Japan is probably one of the top, I would say it's the top country in the world in terms of disaster preparedness.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing if you have the possibility to go to Japan, please go and please observe how every building has its own plan in case of earthquakes, because yes. Japan is famous for earthquakes, mm-hmm. and those are pretty strong earthquakes as well.
Very strong.
And they have central, like nuclear plants, mm-hmm. so they deal with pretty delicate stuff over
yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
Despite that, they have revised plan, effective plans to take care of everything that can happen and protect the people mm-hmm. with plans that are effective, plans that are comprehensive, and in particular plans that are revised on very, like, with high frequency to make sure that everything is included and no one is left out from those plans.
Yes, absolutely. Readiness, preparedness, and always prepare for the worst case scenario and pray for the best case scenario. And yes, the cities can learn, can rebuild. And New Orleans has proven that that's possible. It takes time, right? It takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of creating this magnet of attraction for business to come here. And businesses, right, so need to know, you know, first, can I successfully undertake my business? Do I have the necessary human capital? And what will happen in the event of a negative event? Again, I think the city has proven that even if hurricanes come through, a couple of years, 3 years ago, we have like 5 hurricanes, and the city operated, you know, quite well. and provides that robustness for the natural disasters. And again, learning from the from those that suffered the same earthquakes, Mexico, Chile, you know, Japan, flooding that happens in the in Southeast Asia, which is also pretty frequent, is something that we can learn from the Dutch as well. In then expand the knowledge, expand what we have learned, expand that how we can be more resilient, promote more business development. And that's, again, part of the challenge, especially when some of those anchor companies leave. I guess it's a policy recommendation. The city should emphasize on bringing back anchor companies that can attract other companies and from there to rebuild. It's a difficult task, but if it's done successfully, I think the city could come back up again to be, you know, that what it was supposed to be from the get-go, you know, the major port of entry with significant attraction around it and the third wheel of education and also, you know, healthcare.
Yes, absolutely. So if I have to, let's say, share one final takeaway, I'm sure you have one too. Mine is, okay, and it's something that we already discussed earlier. Let's try think about cities as enterprises.
Yes.
So the key to overturn the table, be more prepared, be more willing to react and be able to do it faster is always a function of being able of anticipating risks. So playing carefully with scenario planning, playing carefully with all the tools that we have available, all the resources, monetary resources, non-monetary resources, knowledge sharing, build what we call redundancies, build the backups just in case we need those, and foster collaboration across borders, foster a collaboration both horizontally and vertically, and literally use cities as enterprises. Mm-hmm. So because we know and we learn from enterprises how agile they can be, mm-hmm. how quick they can be to react to shocks, because otherwise enterprises won't be able to survive.
Yes, yes, indeed. I mean, as you said, you know, final thoughts, resilience is a big one. You know, being able to have sustainable practices, have that readiness, and the reinjecting the city into the global arena is going to be a must-have because the city, again, is a natural port, and consequently, most of its activities need to be linked to the capabilities of being plugged into the world economy. So I go back to my bias, re-injecting the city of New Orleans as the port of entry of Latin America, I believe, should be a priority as we move forward, away from Katrina, as far as we can, and as fast as we can, so that we rebuild that those relationships that have been central or were central to the city throughout history.
Perfect. And if I may, I would like to close this episode with one quote from The Maroon, which is our internal magazine here at Loyola University New Orleans, yes. Which says, preserving these stories ensures that families are not erased from history, mm-hmm. and that the pain they lived through is honored rather than ignored.
Correct.
So there's always a lesson, and it's always important to remember and to do it in a way we can learn from the past.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have to see the past so that we can understand the future, and we have to be prepared for cases of emergency so that we can move forward in a positive and successful way.
Perfect. So I hope everyone enjoyed this episode, which was kind of particular, but we believe it was essential to talk about it. And there is always some lesson to share and to learn, not necessarily from international business perspective, but it's something that we do,
yes.
Something we deal with every day. So something that we really wanted to share with all of you. So I hope we were able to kind of like share with you the passions that we have, and how important this topic is to us.
Absolutely. We have to honor those that have suffered from this. We have to learn from their sufferings, and we have to make sure that whatever we do is to improve the well-being of people. And so this is a session, you know, podcast in honor of those that serve, the honor of all those that help the city first respondents, those that were displaced, people that unfortunately lost their lives, and those that left, you know, consider coming back and bring your knowledge to the city and help us continue rebuilding this beautiful city. Thank you so much, Ali.
Thank you. So please remember to follow us over social media, visit the Center for International Business website, Loyola University New Orleans, and I hope to have you again for the next episodes of Gumbo of Opportunities. All right?
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Gumbo of Opportunities, the podcast about international business of Southern Louisiana and New Orleans. Huge thanks to Farah, Oban, and all the staff involved for making this podcast possible. The music is New Orleans Jazz Guitar Music by The Music Hive.